it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Good afternoon and welcome to the fourth of our World Cup 2022 podcasts, now completely inappropriately named Never Write Off the Germans. My name is Ashley Baker and I'm the Lady Susan Hussey of podcasts. I'm just going to keep asking my guests inappropriate questions until I get fired. And what guests we have today? First of all, an author, director, tennis reporter, co-host of the Chels podcast, Chelsea fan Kerry Levy. Hello.
Good afternoon, evening, whenever
you're listening to this. Secondly, the presenter and comedy writer who many of you will know from his TalkSport show with Andy Jacobs, it's Tottenham supporter Paul Hawksby. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Ashley.
Hello. And finally, this week it's Winner Stays On, because I'm joined by last week's triumphant guest, comedian, writer, Southampton fan, Steve Hall. Greetings, Steve.
Hello. I'm proudly wearing, a recent eBay purchase, a Southampton rank Xerox top from 1982.
That is beautiful. I see that and I see, I see Danny Wallace, but with no offence to your hair loss, I also see a touch of the late David Armstrong.
Yes, David Armstrong has the greatest beginning to an autobiography. I'm going to misquote it, but it was something like the day I picked up my first England cap later that evening, I was wiping sheepdog diarrhea off my carpet.
That's fantastic.
That is pretty good. Well, if you've not heard the show before, there'll be six clips, two each, with a halftime break in between. Hopefully, we're going to get through most of the big stories along the way. The last podcast was a week ago. Quite a lot has happened in the last 7 days. Kerry, first, what is going on in this clip here?
I was really happy for him, to be fair. I know he gets a little bit of stick for playing, and honestly, I can't understand it for the life of me. He's played so well in these last two games, and it's a pleasure playing with him.
So, Kerry, do you know, who that was talking and which of his teammates he was talking about?
I think it's Jude Bellingham talking about... Jordan. So, you know, it's Jordan Henderson. Interesting, because what you've got is a 19-year-old kid who steps up to the mic, having just bossed a game, and going, I'm not having them say any rude things about possibly my future teammate, but also an elder statesman of this team who's come in and done a fantastic job. I thought it was magnificent, and I think it shows the cut of this guy's jib to me. If I'm right.
You are right. Who was magnificent? Well, they were both magnificent, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I meant that, you know, he was absolutely right sticking up for Jordan Henderson because he's playing well and he's been getting a lot of stick, apparently, which I don't get any of.
He's one of those players who I think always gets stick, doesn't he? I think he gets it off, to be honest with you, he gets it off Liverpool fans as well. Not for me, I should say, but... He's a great player. I mean, Paul, were you a fan of Henderson?
Yeah, I mean, he was important last night, I think. The last couple of games, they feel that he's important for his shouting. I mean, it's great to have players just out. I mean, he's out there for more than that, but it sounds like his shouting is quite key to him getting selected, being the manager on the pitch. They've been shouting and pointing. I mean, they're lost arts, aren't they, really?
They are.
And very good at shouting at very close quarters after that first goal last night. Yeah. Really shouting when you were 2 inches from the other person's face.
That was quite homoerotic.
It was Alan Bates, wasn't it? I expected wrestling to happen.
But it felt brave in Qatar. It felt like they were tempting the authorities to do something.
Plan beforehand.
Yeah, no, but I assume you're right, Paul. He must be there for more than pointing and shouting, because I feel I could do that. Even at my age, even at 47, I feel that I could do quite a good job of pointing and shouting. But thereafter, I would be shit, clearly.
Yeah. He's obviously, as I say, he's got more than that in his locker, but that doesn't hurt, does it? Doesn't hurt having the pointing and shouting as a backup.
Are we dreaming now? I mean, it does feel like that this actually is a... And I've been a critic of Southgate, but this does actually look like a really good team.
Yeah,
I don't know. The centre-backs are my own... The centre-backs are my only worry. Like, it's difficult to not get... I feel like the Grinch, even... You're meant to just go with it, but against Mbappe, I don't know how it's going to turn out. It's the one thing where I find myself wondering if Dier was starting or if Tomori had been in the squad in the first place. They just look a bit nervy. That first half hour, there was Pickford made a very good stop.
He did.
And I just wonder how that's going to be when we're up against a properly world-class team. That's going to hold together.
Have a listen to this clip, Paul. Let me know who you think Gary Lineker is talking about here.
He knows how good he is. Mm.
He knows.
He knows. It just exudes confidence, doesn't he?
He is, and he's that.
So believe it or not, he's not talking about me. who is it who knows just how good they are?
I think it is probably Kylian Mbappe, isn't it? I would imagine.
It is Mbappe.
Yeah.
Is he the best player in the world now, do you think?
One of the great things, he really does seem to be enjoying himself. He's not sort of weighed down by the weight of this, considering that he's kind of carrying the nation to an extent. And he does seem to be really loving his football. And there's a joy. And I hope he doesn't feel like that, obviously, on Saturday. Trying to stop him is going to be hard because Walker last night with Ismaïla Sarr was in a bit of a foot race and probably should have got booked for it. And he's missed a lot of football. I don't think he's quite as sharp as he normally is. And he's our answer to Kylian Mbappe. We don't have Keown anymore. We haven't got anybody who can put a reducer on him, as Martin likes to say. So if we haven't got anybody like that. So how do you stop him?
Walker ahead of Trippier, you think?
Yeah, I think so. They're just because of the pace. We saw him last night when he put the afterburners on. Jim White in the Telegraph was right. He was running at 22 mile an hour, which on most London streets would get him a ticket, basically, wouldn't it? If he's driving down a Holloway Road or he's driving through Camden Town, it's a bit London centric, but he will be getting a ticket for going. And he just pushed the ball beyond the fullback. And just burnt him off. It's going to be tough.
He is incredible. And what's incredible as well is that to think that they got Giroud instead of Benzema as well. I mean, it could be... It could have been even harder.
Don't you think that, though, that the whole question is really about stopping the supply to Mbappe rather than stopping Mbappe? As we can see, he's one of those. That first goal in the game last night was... It was one of those things that the top, superb, real generational talent players do, where time stands still and everything seems to stop. He just pulls it to one side, then places it, and that's it. Mm. And then time starts again. And I think if we can sort out the supply line and sort out, I think Giroud is good for us to have against us, because at least Stones and Maguire will be used to dealing with somebody like that. It gives them a fight. Then we've got to pick off the ball when it comes the second ball, I think.
Mm.
They're not that strong defensively, though, are they? I mean, I think they've had injuries there as well. And they've had, I think it'll probably be a 0-0 on penalties now, I've said this. But I think that both teams just look to me like they'll score. They look much better going forward than they do at the back. So maybe a high-scoring draw.
Yeah,
it's who can score the most. It could be one of those Titanic Kevin Keegan Newcastle era titles I'm kind of imagining. But maybe it'll be 0-0 now I've said that. We will see.
A high scoring 0-0.
Yeah. An exciting 0-0. Okay, well, Steve, here's a moving on to a different subject. Time for your clip. Have a listen to this.
I think every
television show, every pundit, every person that does your job is waiting for the pitch. Why, nearly an hour later, are they not producing one?
So, well, firstly, you know who that is. He's a...
It's Graham Souness,
former manager of your team. And he's getting excited about something.
I presume, is it waiting for the photograph of the ball over the line for the Japan goal?
It is indeed. Very good. Yes, it is. We waited well over an hour to see that photo. It was still pretty inconclusive. I mean, it was shot. If it's shot from space, it might overhang slightly.
Yeah. Just like, did you notice last week that on social media, the world went absolutely mad. Everybody went out straight after that game. They went out to their garage or whatever, or their shed, and they got some masking tape and they laid it on their kitchen floor. They brought a football in and they took about five or six pictures of that ball from different angles.
Yes.
And then they said, see, and that's what
it was amazing. It felt like it was a combination of sort of what color is the dress meets an Oliver Stone film.
Yeah, the grassy knoll. It did feel a bit like everybody collectively went bonkers. Everybody thought, I'm going to be the first person to do this. And then when they actually went on to Twitter, they saw thousands of other people. I mean, do you know, it's been the partner, one of those people saying, what are you doing? It's 10 o'clock at night. Why are you putting masking tape on our kitchen floor? Why have you brought a football in from the garden? Why are you taking eight pictures of it? Well, what's wrong with you? I mean, it was a collective madness.
I mean, do you feel, I mean, obviously we all laugh at the Germans for going out, but you'd be upset if that was your team, wouldn't you? I mean, how upset would we be if that was England?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've been, you know, we had that, didn't we, with the Frank Lampard moment, but they have the technology now, so they have no excuses, really.
That was a different era. You've just missed it. But I mean, that's so strange. I mean, it's a bit like those, you know, the corner, like, this seems to be a new thing, actually. I don't remember this growing up. In the old days, when I was watching, you know, in the 70s and 80s, corners, you just put the corner in that little quadrant and then you kicked it. But now there's that whole thing about getting it right on the very edge, as if those extra few inches are going to make a difference.
Yeah. And it's got a real element of like your little brother going, but I'm not touching you. No, but I'm not touching you. I'm nearly there, but I'm not quite touching you.
It is proper, like, and then the assistant referee is looking over and just checking that it is very slightly overhanging. You know, it reaches a point where you just go, just let them just do anything. I mean, as long as it's in the vague area of that side of the pitch, just let them take it. But yeah,
from the Germans' point of view, obviously, if the 1966 goal, if that's been suggested that probably wasn't over, you know, that wasn't a goal with modern technology.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they feel, you know, obviously they benefited in 2010 with a Lampard goal, but that's almost two against them.
Mm.
Yeah, no, I mean, they have not had the rub of the green on these decisions, that's for sure. I mean, honestly, the problem is with angles, there isn't actually a definitive straight on angle. If you go to one side slight, even if it's the merest smidgen of a millimetre, it's going to change the way the ball looks. It's a problem they've had in rugby when they're looking for touchdowns and things, and it's crossed over into VAR. And my one concern, if I can make a slightly serious point on here, is I thought that VAR was all about clear and obvious error, not waiting hours for a photograph that's just been photoshopped.
Mm. Yeah.
No, it's a good point. And also, Germans, I mean, do you see Arsene Wenger basically said in his report of the first rounds that the teams that did badly were those that were concentrating on making a political statement. That whole thing about the German teams, it did, you know, respect to them, they did that photo covering the mouths. And then do you see the Qatari TV? They all celebrated Germany going out by covering their hands, covering their mouths. Hands.
This is FIFA's Arsene Wenger these days, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. This is an odd one because, you know, we're used to that whole, you know, that was a great Mitchell and Webb sketch, you know, the Germans, are we the baddies? But in this case, they very much aren't, are they? I mean, they really are the good guys here. They've gone out and made a statement. And, you know, the Qatari TV are all right. They're laughing and enjoying it. But these are the good guys.
So I'm kind of intrigued to see whoever ends up winning. I would like to see what sort of protest might happen for the team that wins. That just someone, you know, shooting the bird in Infantino's face.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I suppose exactly. If England, I mean, they didn't want to wear the armbands because, like, maybe they'll get Kane will get a yellow card or something like that. But once you've won it, anything goes.
Yeah, I suppose that's true at the end of the game. That's you could custard pie, couldn't you? When he hands you the trophy, big custard pie, big foam on a little paper plate, right?
Well, that would be the, yeah, if it, beyond even the armbands, if we win the World Cup, if there could be some sort of secretly somewhere on the pitch, they've just managed to get everyone in rainbow jumpsuits.
Yeah.
But also with rainbow custard pies. That'd be fantastic.
Tonight, we all feel like rainbow custard pies.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Well, who knows? Well, hopefully we'll get that far and we'll find out. Well, at the end of that, it's time for a very quick message from our sponsors. We'll be back in a minute.
Get all the latest World Cup headlines and bite-sized opinion on the World Cup Whistleblowers Daily Podcast. Join Mark Smith and a rotating lineup of contributors from the world of football and entertainment as they dissect all the big talking points in one small package. Whether it's bringing you reaction to the games, fallout from a bad managerial decision, or just the latest scandal to engulf the host nation, the World Cup Whistleblowers Daily Podcast will be covering it concisely every weekday of the tournament. Search for The Whistleblowers wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Never Out of the Germans is brought to you by My Diesel Claim. Over a million people have put their trust in them. That's more than 10 sellout crowds at Wembley. If you owned or leased a diesel vehicle between 2009 and 2020, you could be entitled to significant compensation. It's free to sign up, and you can check your vehicle's eligibility instantly. Join millions of other football fans and visit mydieselclaim.com today or click the link in this podcast show description. Now, you can be part of the podcast during the World Cup by getting in touch with us about anything interesting or entertaining you've seen via our Facebook page or Twitter account at Never Write Off. Thanks to the listener who sent this clip, which I somehow missed, passed me by. It's of an Italian TV commentator reading out the names of the South Korean team.
Questo allenatore. La Corea del Sud con Kim, Jung-Wan, Na So Lin e Wang.
I love that so much. The starting 11 is Kim.
I remember in 1994, there was, I think it might, again, it might have been the South Korean team then, that there were lots of people with Choi in their name, and whichever ITV commentator introduced by saying, well, you pays your money, you takes your Choi's. And then later on in the comment, whoever's actually commentating live, they said, yes, as whoever it was said, there are quite a lot of them with the same name. So you'll find it, you'll find a lot of them sounding the same as well as looking the same.
Oh, God.
Different times.
They were different indeed.
That is the era when it was obligatory. If you were commentating on a team with an African nation, you had to talk about the naivety of the Africans.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Almost contractual that Tony Gubber had to say that.
Well, that's the thing, that I can remember exactly which commentator it was said that in 94, but I feel it's appropriate to not identify them.
Okay, the naivety of the Steve Hall, not... Let's crack on with our second trio of clips. Kerry, what is going on here? Well, so I guess give you a little bit of a clue. That is a nation support. That's one of the team's supporters who are at the World Cup, and they're celebrating something.
Oh, I I have no idea. I really don't have a clue. I'm going to have to open this one up to someone else. Serbia or
anyone want to?
Well, there's the genuine concern that if we pick a nation, we end up sounding racist.
it is an African nation. And there was actually a name in there. They were celebrating. You could actually hear the name. Do you want to play it again, Leon? Let's hear it one more time. Yeah, it's quite a strange pronunciation of the name of the country that they're singing about. No takers.
It's the toughest. Not Morocco, is it?
It's Uruguay they're singing.
Oh, blimey. See, there Uruguay we are. Out. I jumped in, Steve, and that's what happened to me. I can't tell the difference between a South American and somebody who's...
Uruguay Morocco. Out. It's the... That is, yes, the Ghana Clip fans celebrating the fact they had lost.
Ah, right.
Uruguay, who they have a little bit of previous with.
Oh, yes.
It was a weird kind of revenge, wasn't it? They got their revenge, but not in the way they wanted.
Exactly. Is that a dictionary definition, Pyrrhic victory? I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. They did get to watch Luis Suarez cry, though, didn't they? They got a kind of vicarious pleasure of seeing the architect of their downfall 12 years ago in tears.
I mean, they went out, but they actually did play one. I was, you know, they didn't have much of a say in it, but had they conceded one extra goal, Uruguay would have gone through. So I suppose they can lay claim to that part in Uruguay's downfall. They were a little, I mean, do we feel sorry for them at all? Because I've got to be honest, I did. I thought they had an absolute cast iron penalty. Mm. I don't know if you saw the game, but there was Darwin Nunez was brought down. And the referee didn't give it. And then he was told by the VAR to go and watch on the monitor. And we all know, watching the Premier League now, that as soon as the referee goes to the monitor, you're already celebrating or already sad, you know, depending on what it is you're expecting. And he watched it and didn't give it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would like to feel sorry for Uruguay, but I don't. Until they've got rid of Suarez.
It's interesting. Even Liverpool fans who loved him for his time at Liverpool are that any of that sympathy is gone.
Yes.
Completely sawn off by penalties. The one that was given against them in the Portugal game, when the guy basically fell over and his hand hit the ball, had that not been given as a penalty and Fernandes scored it, then they would have gone through. That was the goal difference that it made. So they were double sawn off. But, you know, a whole World Cup lifetime of shithousing kind of came back to haunt them, didn't it, really? So it was a dish best served cold.
Yeah. I have Montevideo assistant referee.
Yeah.
and I love the fact that we did get a few minutes of old school classic Uruguay losing it right at the end. And you thought, oh yeah, this is going to get incredibly tasty. But then
that's one of my earliest memories of when the 86 World Cup, where they have the player sent off against Scotland in the first minute and how long it took to calm that game down.
It's against Scotland. It was a tackle on Strachan, wasn't it? He just took him right out. Yeah. But then you see Cavani pushed over the monitor, smashed the VAR monitor as he walked off. Mm. And I just wondered at the time whether they would have made him pay for it and sort of say, you know, well, you're going to have to... It'd be like the Ace Face, wouldn't he, in Quadrophenia? Will you take a check? It'd be like Sting standing there. He'd just give him the money. He'd just reel off a load of 50s and just pay it. But by pushing the monitor over, really.
Yeah, it's not quality. I mean, you don't see that kind of abuse anymore, do you? I mean, you really don't.
They do have a history of sore losing.
And they've turned on FIFA. They've now said it's a conspiracy theory. There's a couple of quotes from Godin and from Suarez saying FIFA always looked to ruin it for Uruguay. So things have to change, they've been saying. So it's now a conspiracy theory. Mm.
So, okay, Paul, well, time for your second clip. Have a listen to this. And it's actually another clip from the BBC again. But what are they talking about?
Yeah, they made it very difficult. That was the game plan, to sit, to press, frustrate, be tight and compact, and that's exactly what they were. And it was always going to have to be a piece of brilliance that broke the deadlock, and that's exactly what happened.
Ooh.
There's been so many games over the last week
that have been like that.
Because there's lots of nil-nils. And so a team who sat deep and won, a little bit of genius.
Is it an Argentina? Was it a game featuring Lionel Messi?
It is. Yeah.
Was it the Poland game?
It was the Poland game.
Right.
Very good. So Messi. So we said is Mbappe the best player in the world? But talking about Messi, obviously, maybe not quite what he was. But I mean, do you want to see him win the World Cup? Is this like, do you feel that this would be the culmination of an amazing career? It's something you actually want to see now?
Yeah. I mean, it would be a fantastic story. I don't know if anybody's watched the Messi documentary they got on the Beeb at the moment. I mean, it is quite a story. And especially his story around Argentina and the fact they've never taken to him. They always feel he's basically Spanish. And, you know, whenever they used to kind of shout his name out at games, there'd be this kind of muted applause and they'd shout Tevez's name and the crowd would go mad. And despite his genius, he's seen as a European and it would be some story. I mean, Copa America was some way, but a World Cup is a World Cup. I'm not altogether sure they're completely good enough to win it, but it would be a great story.
Yeah. And don't you think, but he's a funny player, Messi, because up until the Copa America, he really hadn't done it for his country. Mm. And I think that's been the major part of the issue, is that he does all these incredible things in club football. And then internationally, he just hasn't quite done it until, as I say, the Copa America. And yeah, maybe this is his time. I agree with you, Paul. I just don't think they've got enough in them as a team to... And he's not quite the Messi of a few years ago.
No.
I just don't think he can necessarily bail them out all the time.
Well, interesting. My wife's Australian, and so we watched the Argentina Australia game with an extra passion. Mm. And the fact that Australia ran them so close, then I don't think they'll win. It was, you know, Australia acquitted themselves very well.
Yeah. Could easily, those couple of chances at the end.
Block from Martinez from that amazing run, that would have been a hell of a goal.
But he's just, they've been showing him on TV, he's just wandering about a bit. He just sort of wanders about looking for a bit of space. Generally, it's like walking football a lot of the time. And then little bursts of energy is the way he's playing. It's effective. Yeah. He gets in great positions, doesn't he?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, what do you think would be the greater kind of conclusion of his career? Winning the World Cup or going to Inter Milan to work with Phil Neville?
Winter Miami. I mean, oh, yes.
Into Miami.
Yes, yeah, that would be.
Phil Neville, you think, you watch him now and think, oh, he's just wandering around at walking pace. But Neville gets his hands on him.
Well, Phil will be saying things like, I would have, well played today, Lionel, but I would have loved to have seen you played that one. Just play that out to the left wing. You know, you carry the ball slightly too long. Imagine he'll be trying to kind of balance his game, you know. I think I can get older and I can make you into a player. I think it would be quite interesting, won't it? But stick with me, Lionel, and you're going to go far.
Yeah, well, so that was Shearer talking about Messi, yes, in the Argentina, Australia. But you mentioned Poland. I mean, Lewandowski, obviously, his World Cup's done, but that penalty at the end, I felt that did you see that? He took a penalty at the last minute. It was one of the worst penalties you will ever see. And admittedly, the goalie was Lloris was slightly off his line, and I think Sunday was virtually standing next to him. But I feel if you take a penalty that shit, you shouldn't be allowed to retake it.
It was
like a celebrity cricket match when the star comes in, gets bowled first ball, and trudges up. Oh, no, it was a noble. Come back.
I didn't think I was going to see a worse penalty this World Cup, and I've just watched the Japan-Croatia shootout. We recorded this, and that blew it out.
Three contenders.
Yeah, they were. That was proper old my beer moment, wasn't it? It was one of those, you know, you're not going to see a worse penalty at this World Cup. Hang on, lads. They were terrible pens.
I felt sad for Taki Minamino. He used to play for Liverpool and your team as well, Steve.
And Maya Yoshida as well, ex-Saints as well. So
yeah, that was a it was a really weak. But that's Croatia, isn't it? They've done this before. So
look crap and carry on. Yeah.
Just win on penalties. Yeah, it may be. Maybe we shouldn't underestimate them. Final clip of the show. Steve, have a listen to this moment and a little bit of hyperbole coming.
From Douala on the Gulf of Guinea to Maroua at its northernmost tip, points between and beyond. Rise and celebrate a moment.
That is...
Wow.
That is...
Like a geography question, really, isn't it?
Are they rejected lyrics for Toto's Africa?
Phenomenal hyperbole.
I presume, is that Morocco? I'm trying to think of the African teams that are still. Is that Morocco getting through?
It's not. It's all right. So I'll give you a clue. It's if anyone wants to jump in, it's a African team who are now no longer in the World Cup.
It's Senegal.
Senegal.
And it's not Senegal either. Oh. It's a great moment, though, that I guess will go down in the history of African football, but a bit of a dead rubber of a game.
Oh, Cameroon.
It is Cameroon. Oh. Yes.
Yes. Beating Brazil.
That last minute goal. And then he got sent off.
Mm.
And the referee did that wonderful just handshake, just kind of apologetic fist bump. I'm sorry. I know it's ridiculous, but I've got to send you off.
Yeah. And Boubacar was great, wasn't it? That was fantastic. He seemed so delighted to have been sent off right at the end of the game.
You'll never see someone so happy to be sent off. Whenever I see someone really happy to be sent off, anything like that, I always think Malaysian betting syndicate there. he had money on that. Because it is a ridiculous rule, that, isn't it? But we want to see passion, and to have to get a yellow card for that.
I would love to hear someone commentating on England in with that degree of condescension.
Yeah,
from the Isle of Wight, to the shores of Herne Bay.
I mean, we've seen some real ridiculous, brilliant moments in this World Cup, and ridiculous ones too. Mm. I think my most ridiculous moment is, you know, the air header by Ronaldo claiming that goal.
Yeah.
that just made me laugh because we're just going, well, he never got near it. And then that look at me, and we're saying, we are looking at you.
He's just going, he really is falling out with everyone now, even the Portuguese coach is now out of cap at him today.
Yeah.
He might take the captaincy away. Won't guarantee he's captain.
He really is kind of, it's like he's burning every bridge possible at the moment, it seems.
Yeah. Where could he possibly go next?
He'll be falling out with Piers Morgan next. I mean, surely not. But it is strange. Yes. No, you're right, though, about that kind of, it's brilliantly condescending, because you wouldn't do that of England. I'm getting that excited about someone from England scoring. It's been a strange World Cup, though, isn't it? Because like Brazil, you know, they lost that game, but no one won all their games. It's almost as if I don't know whether or not, obviously, teams who won the first two games then made so many changes and take their foot off the gas a little bit, and then you know, which kind of slightly diminishes the competition a little bit. And then now they're talking, though, in the next World Cup of having three teams in groups. So if one team wins the first two games, the third game will be completely redundant anyway.
They might be stepping back from that because of what's happened in this World Cup. They're suddenly starting to talk again about rejigging it. I think it'd be a mistake. I mean, 48 teams. I mean, how many games will there be a day?
Yeah.
I mean, there'll be like a 6 o'clock kickoff, a 10 o'clock kickoff. I mean, it's...
My limited memories of 1982, where is that the one where it was where the system was abused? Is it the Austria game?
Yeah,
the nil-nil, walking pace.
Yeah. They won 1-0. Yeah, they had to win. They won 1-0.
Yeah,
but after the early first goal, they just took the piss.
Yeah. And again, on obviously England going out of that World Cup undefeated as well with the two nil-nils.
Mm. Yeah,
the system has been proved not to work.
No, right, exactly. It's a bad idea. Yeah.
Yes. There you had, well, that was the West Germany was in the first round groups, the traditional four teams. But then you had, instead of the knockout round, you had the groups of three. But it's the same thing. You always just get that last game potentially, meaning depending on if one team wins the first two, then the next one being meaningless. But there's nothing FIFA likes. Also, anyway, 32 is clearly the right number, because 32, 16, 8, 4, 2, 1. Yeah. Clearly that works.
And don't you think there's a bit of a problem as well? You know, do they not think, I know they don't think of the fan, but do they not understand how hard it is to watch four games a day?
Yeah.
You know, everything else goes by the wayside.
It has been, for sure. For me, I've done nothing else. And yeah, I mean, you do get fatigued on those four game days. Mm. By the fourth one, you are fatigued. Sure.
I was exhausted.
48 teams. Is that 48? That's almost a quarter of the countries in the world.
Yeah.
That's not.
How many teams play? Couldn't we just have one giant one? And we no longer have seasons.
If it meant Infantino got more votes and could stay in his job, he probably would have a 212-team World Cup. But, I mean, 48 teams, it's... I mean, we are going to have, like, it's going to be 8 o'clock in the morning. Don't join us tomorrow morning, Gary says, for Montserrat versus the Maldives. It's going to be one of those. And it's going to be... It's really going to test your patience, I think, at times.
And still Scotland don't qualify. That's you keep upping the numbers until we're near the end, but predictions, England, France, or the whole thing, Paul, what are you thinking at the moment?
You have to
have one winner.
We've got really good players and we're playing well and we can go toe-to-toe with France. My gut feeling is we may just get maybe one of those heroic failures. I certainly hope not. And maybe it will go to pens or just a moment of magic towards the end. Or as Steve was saying, you know, Harry Maguire in the ball taken off of him by Tchouameni or something like that and them scoring. I don't know. But, you know, it could be one of those moments. But I think it'll be a good game. And I think if it is going to be failure, it'll be glorious failure in the great English tradition.
We don't do it. It's how we like it. Kerry, for you, or just that game at the World Cup in general, a winner?
I do think England have got a very good chance against France because I think the pressure's more on them and they're probably more worried about us than we are worried about them because they are the favourites. We'll just get on and do what we've got to do. We've had the vitriol from the people back home about the game with the USA, about how terrible, how awful, how disgusting, how disgraceful. And then everyone forgot about it and we've moved on. We're past all that. England can't lose now, even if they lose, because I think they've already shown there's a plan. If we get beaten by France, it's no disgrace. But I don't think we will. I reckon we'll win by two. So, yes, if we win that, I said at the beginning, whoever beats France wins the World Cup. So, yeah, my predictions are known to go horribly wrong most of the time.
Okay, that is a brave call. Steve?
Well, at the start of the tournament, I said I'd thought France would win, but I'm now I'm detecting a tiny amount of optimism creeping into my soul. And I do, despite everything, I do have a vague feeling we might be onto something this time. So I think we might win 3-2 is my guess. And I think we could then go on and then, but I'll find a way to not enjoy it. We'll win the World Cup and I'll get furious that it gets co-opted by Rishi Sunak.
If we don't win, I think I'd like to go for Morocco.
Okay.
Just think it'd be different.
It certainly would be different.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what? There'll be a winner of the World Cup and there'll be a winner of the show. We have to have a winner. That's the way it works. And by my calculations, it's Paul Hawksby.
Oh, wow.
His Wikipedia erroneously claims that he raps on World in Motion, but that isn't true. But what is true is he's the winner today, which is, I think, a better honour. So well done, Paul.
Thank you, Ashley. Is there a cash prize or... premium bonds or a record token?
No, and the knowledge that you won, despite the fact that Steve's Montevideo assistant referee is up there, I think, on jokes that I've heard on the show in the series. But even so, the victory is yours, Paul. Thanks very much to all my guests, Paul, Kerry, Steve. Enjoy the rest of the football this week. Enjoy England, France. Join me next Monday when I'll have three more great guests alongside me. I'm Ashley Blake, and just remember, you can never write off the Germans, but actually now you can. Goodbye. Sports Social Podcast Network.